We're back here on 560 WQAM. Greg Likens alongside Channing Crowder. Mark Hochman off today. He'll be back tomorrow. Alex Solano with us as well as we continue on here. A lot of NBA talk today with so much going on. Man, we're not even a week removed from the NBA Finals concluding, but between the trades, the rumors, the speculation, it is nonstop in the National Basketball Association. And for more on that, we're going to go out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline where you can shop over 1,500 Toyotas indoors in one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. And welcome in Ben Golliver, national NBA writer from the Washington Post. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben Golliver. Ben, appreciate your time today. How's everything going?
It's good, man. We just got out of the NBA draft media day. You know, Zion Williamson, John Moran, all those guys taking questions from dozens, if not hundreds, of reporters. They seem pretty excited about what's in store tomorrow night. And I think, you know, a lot of basketball fans feel the same way.
Yes, yeah, we're excited about that. And I saw, you know, on Twitter, you posted some videos of those guys talking, including it's got to be a little strange, right, for Zion Williamson. I know that he has long been assumed to be the number one overall pick, but he's already commenting on the new teammates that are going to be acquired from the Los Angeles Lakers, like Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram. That's got to be a strange dynamic. He hasn't been drafted yet, and that trade isn't official yet.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I love about Zion, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and, like, he's kind of nervously laughing. He's fidgeting a little bit. And for a guy who's just, like, so indestructible on the court, he's very, very human off the court and in front of the microphones, very relatable. And I thought he did a nice job handling questions about his potential future teammates, the guys that you mentioned, and also, you know, just telling the story of where he was, you know, when he found out about the Anthony Davis trade. I guess he was at the golf range in Durham, North Carolina, there near Duke University. All of a sudden, his phone starts blowing up. His Twitter starts blowing up. He checks it, you know, sees the news, and, you know, realizes that, you know what, the Pelicans are going to be his franchise. And I think he was trying to downplay it, you know, trying to obviously keep his head together amid what's got to be just a crazy week when you think about all the Pelicans have gone through and all that they're going to go through here over the next 24 hours as prospects. But ultimately, it's a great situation for him. I think they're so much better off trading Anthony Davis, getting rid of that drama, all of the cloud of does he want to be here, all of those rumors, all of that stuff, and acquiring a bunch of really talented young players to put around Zion and allowing him to be the face of the team. You know, he visited New Orleans earlier this month. He loved meeting with the fans. They were giving him high fives on the street saying, hey, welcome to New Orleans. You know, we want to have you here. And after Anthony Davis kind of left on a sour note and left a lot of fans, I think, pretty upset and feeling burned by how he played that situation, I think it's a dream scenario for a guy like Zion Williamson, who not only has amazing basketball skills, but also a lot of charisma and a really wide smile that's infectious.
And, Ben, I want to ask you about that because I was just checking out your Twitter, you know, during the break, and his interviews, he gets it. Like, Zion gets what's going on. He understands it. He's not a deer, you know, a deer in the headlights. But we know he's a high jumper. We know he's athletic. We know, he has explosiveness. But what about his game? Like, what about, you know, what's he going to be in the NBA? Is his game going to transition to the next level of being a franchise changer?
You know, I think so. I'm all in on the Zion hype. I really believe he's the real deal. And a couple of reasons. You mentioned how he gets it. I mean, he's up there on the stage, and they ask him, well, which guys do you like to watch YouTube highlights of? And he says, well, Michael Jordan. Already, you know, you start to salivate. You say, okay, he's got pretty good taste in legends, right? But then he says, Michael Jordan is an underrated defensive player. He doesn't get enough credit for that side of the basketball. And then you say, oh, yes, like you said, he really gets it. This guy knows what it takes to win. I think you saw that all the time at Duke. I mean, this is a player who didn't need to be diving around on loose balls, right? We saw Ben Simmons at LSU. I mean, he was jogging through that whole season, wasn't he? I mean, just trying not to put himself in any negative situations or any chance to get injured. You look at Zion by comparison, he's all over the court. I mean, he's diving, he's in practices for rebounds. I mean, he's doing whatever he possibly can to help his team win. And I think that's one of his most impressive attributes. I mean, put aside the dunking and all the other physical gifts, he's got a great motor. He's incredibly versatile. He can defend multiple positions. He can cover a lot of ground. He can get up and block shots. I mean, he can really do it all, and that's what's got me excited about him. But I think offensively, you know, if you want him to be a star, the most important thing you can do as an organization is to just maximize the spacing around him, get as many shooters as you can. And I think when you look at the Pelicans trade, there's a lot to like about Lonzo Ball and guys like Brandon Ingram, but neither one of those guys is a knockdown three-point shooter. And so when I look at that number four pick that New Orleans has, I really hope they draft a shooter. There's an obvious one who should be available, Darius Garland. I think, to me, that's what I would do with that pick. I would take him. I would hope that his shooting can really help unlock Zion in the half court and turn him into this, like, you know, one-on-one beast that nobody can stop.
Ben Golliver, national NBA writer from the Washington Post, joining us here on 560 WQAM. While we're on the topic of the draft, I saw your mock draft for the Washington Post has Gonzaga's Rui Hachimura going to the Heat at number 13. If that is indeed the pick, how do you see him not only making the transition to the NBA, but also fitting in with Miami Heat?
Well, he's got a really interesting game. I mean, so he came late to basketball because his family, he's Japanese, right? And so he kind of... It's one of these, just completely out of nowhere picks by Gonzaga. They've got an incredible track record of getting international players there and then developing them. They've taught him how to shoot the mid-range jumper. He's pretty forceful, strong, quick, athletic, moves pretty well. But I think ultimately, to me, when I look at the Heat culture, I mean, that's sort of what they've been defined by, right? It's like a bunch of grinders. You know, you kind of give Eric Spoelstra, whatever kind of talent, he's always going to maximize it. And I just think it would be a perfect personality fit for somebody like Hachimura, who's already put a ton of work into his game here over the last 3 or 4 years, to just kind of keep developing in that type of environment. Now, there's some question, is he going to be available? You know, it's very possible that somebody else would pick him before he gets to Miami. But, you know, I kind of made that mock draft call with my heart a little bit because I was trying to say, hey, what's the best place for this guy to really – reach his full potential. And to do that, he's going to need to learn how to shoot the three-pointer, especially from the corners. And I also think he's going to need to get a little bit more comfortable handling the ball and a little bit more creative off the dribble. But, you know, I trust Miami's coaching staff. I mean, that's been a specialty of theirs to try to, like, you know, build players up and pull new skills out of them. And I just think he'd be a great fit there.
And I want to ask you about Anthony Davis, LeBron now teamed up in L.A., and as soon as AD goes there, Ben, they say, oh, they're the favorite to win the West. They're the favorite to win the championship. It's that easy. They don't need to see the other 13 players or anything. Those two guys together, they can win the West.
I don't know about that, man. I know it's a five-man game, right? And in the playoffs, you see you need 7, 8, 9 guys to win. I mean, Toronto wins the title because they basically outlast everybody, and they're riding, 8 or 9 guys in their rotation who are all capable players. I don't think it's a two-man game. I don't think two guys is going to get it done in the Western Conference, and I'm not sure why they're the betting favorites. I mean, that just tells me there's a lot of dumb money out there. People are getting a little bit too excited, right? They're seeing the fantasy implications, and they're thinking real basketball is like fantasy basketball. I mean, right now, I would put the Milwaukee Bucks, I would put either the Toronto Raptors or the Clippers, you know, whichever one of those teams gets Kawhi Leonard. I would put a team like the Denver Nuggets, maybe even the Utah Jazz. You could also throw in the Philadelphia 76ers. I would put all of those teams above the Los Angeles Lakers. And the only way I would qualify that is, you know, if they do find a way to get a third star, maybe somebody like Kemba Walker, where he really fits well with their group, then, okay, their ceiling's going to be boosted up a little bit more. But I think the Lakers are going to have a hard time filling out that roster and rotation. And we also saw what happened last year, didn't we? I mean, what a mess. Lance Stephenson, Michael Beasley, I mean, they're picking these guys up who are just not helpful at all. And that's going to be the real challenge for the Lakers. It's not just about winning the big, splashy blockbuster. It's about making lots of quiet, smaller moves that are helpful around the edges. And we're going to see if they can do that. I'm not convinced yet.
Ben Golliver, national NBA writer from the Washington Post, joining us here on 560 WQAM. Ben, since you mentioned the Bucks as one of your favorites for next year, how do you envision them handling the contract situations of, you know, Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Malcolm Brogdon? Do you think they just try to bring everybody back? Will we see them go out and try to replace some of those players? Because they do have some big decisions to make here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I really hope they don't get cheap, right? Because this is Giannis's prime right now. I mean, he showed he's an MVP-level player. He shows he needs a little bit of help because he can't shoot the basketball in the playoffs. So you have to have as much talent around him as possible. There is no excuse. It doesn't matter if you're a small market team. It doesn't matter any other factors. You need to pay up to keep that team around him. Or guess what? In 2 years when he's a free agent, he's going to say, I want to go to a team that will pay to put talent around me. So I think for the Bucks, they have to do everything they possibly can to keep all of those players. Middleton, to me, is the top priority, then Lopez, then Brogdon. The only reason why I say that is because they don't really have any other good wings besides Middleton, and because Lopez was just lights out for them all season as a center. If they lose either one of those guys, I think their identity is going to really take a hit. Now, that doesn't mean Brogdon's expendable either, but they do have Eric Bledsoe, who they've already re-signed to an extension, back in the spring. So at least he's kind of there as a fill-in player. But if you're asking me who would you rather have, Malcolm Brogdon or Eric Bledsoe, I think for the next 3 or 4 years, I'd rather have Brogdon. He's just a little bit steadier, a little bit more reliable. And, you know, Bledsoe, unfortunately, just kind of gets into his own head in the playoffs, and he's kind of, you know, he's there some nights, and he disappears other nights. So I don't see any of those guys being, you know, players that they can just try to easily replace. And I really hope they spend the money that it takes to keep them and then try to figure it out. Maybe trade some of these other bad contracts they have. I don't know, Tony Snell or Ilya Sova. I mean, some of those guys are maybe, you know, trade bait you can kind of get rid of. But they need to keep their core together because it's an amazing opportunity for Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference right now, especially if Kawhi leaves. I mean, they should be the prohibitive favorites going into next season. Don't blow it over some money.
And staying in the East, what's going on? A year ago, Ben, Danny Ainge looked like a genius. Now Horford's opting out. Kyrie's leaving. Why is his plans not working the way he thought they were?
To be honest, I trace it all back to the Gordon Hayward injury. I really think that was the moment where everything got screwed up because they really had dreams of a super team. And you bring in a guy like Gordon Hayward and you're getting full production out of him, I think everybody stays happy and they can kind of keep that thing together. The problem is he was basically giving them next to nothing. He cost them the whole season because of the injury. It's not his fault. He didn't mean to get injured, of course. But his injury, you know, set back their entire timetable. And then it really required a lot of adjustments once he came back in there. And, of course, we know how the NBA locker rooms work. They're looking across at Gordon Hayward and saying, wait a minute, we're paying this guy $30 million to give us, what, 10 points a game? Oh, this is crazy. And everybody starts to wonder, well, you know, we're probably stuck with him. If we can't trade him, does that mean I should start to go? If he's not able to show up in the playoffs, like how high is our ceiling? All those kinds of questions start to build. And you knew that they had chemistry problems all season long last year, in part because of Kyrie, you know, really casting himself as like the savior, even though he really wasn't able to deliver. And I also think in part because of the Hayward question of just a guy who's making that much money and not really able to contribute. So it doesn't really surprise me to see the Celtics splinter like this. I mean, I think they're actually better off without Kyrie, you know, getting back to a defensive first identity, less ego, less competition for shots. I think there's going to be more rooms for a guy like, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum to really take the next step in their career and then kind of move forward. But that Al Horford loss, you know, if he does wind up signing elsewhere, that's going to be a crushing blow. I mean, he's the most underrated player for the Celtics here these last couple of years. He's the key to their high-ranked defense. I don't see another player on their roster who's going to be able to step up and do all the things that he did, whether it's setting screens, passing the basketball, covering for his teammates, switching on defense. I mean, all the little stuff that Horford does, they're not going to have anybody else to do that. And I think the Celtics are going to take a pretty significant step back next season.
Ben Golliver, national NBA writer from the Washington Post, joining us here on 560 WQAM. Finally, Ben, as we asked you about the Heat with the draft, but you know, we've heard some Jimmy Butler rumors, at least that he would be interested in talking to the Heat this offseason. Sounds like Hassan Whiteside will opt in. Goran Dragic has already opted in. The Heat in general do not have any financial flexibility. Is there any way for them to make a splash in this offseason, or do you think that Pat Riley and the organization will be patient and let some of these contracts expire over the next couple of years?
Yeah, to me, it's more of a wait-and-see year for Miami because of those contract decisions that you mentioned. I think for Jimmy Butler specifically, like, he's trying to get every last penny. I mean, this is going to be the last major payday for him. And I think whether it's from Philly or other places, I think that he's really intent on trying to get that max deal and being fully taken care of. And that's a tricky proposition just because, you know, he had the weird situation in Minnesota, burned some bridges there. I think he's getting a little bit older and he has a lot of miles from some, you know, playing some huge minutes under Coach Thibodeau throughout his career. So I think for him that, you know, what you're describing is most likely just kind of a negotiating posture, trying to, you know, gin up a market to make sure he gets taken care of. But I think the Heat in general, they're kind of in a pause situation, you know, check back in 12 months. I think they're going to be in a lot more interesting and entertaining scenarios involving stars.
Ben, great work as always. Hope everything goes well at the draft. It's going to be an exciting night tomorrow night. We encourage everybody to follow you on Twitter at Ben Golliver. Read your work in the Washington Post. Thank you very much for the time today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, guys. Take care.
All right, there he is, Ben Golliver, who's the national writer for the NBA from the Washington Post. And you heard there, up there in Brooklyn, talking to Zion, Ja Morant. As that's going to be an exciting night tomorrow for the NBA draft.